I was on the
The first part of this is just me giving you an overview of the NCA for agriculture, but it's basically, it's more designed to get some feedback from everyone on what you think of it and some ideas for the process. Because the last two studies for the National Climate Assessment were a lot smaller than the whole thing is now. And there's an emphasis now on creating a process for this assessment for the future. So that's why we want your input. And it's wide open on a lot of things. So we've added a few new aspects to it. And, you know, if we can't get to it now, we'll get to it in the future type of thing. So anyway. Well, anyway, I'm Charlie Walthall. I'm with the ARS Office of National Programs. I'm the National Program Leader for Climate Change, Soils, and Air Emissions. And I also oversee anything with geospatial technologies and process modeling. And actually, my cohort in this that I should have put up here as a co-author is Jerry Hatfield. I'm sure everybody knows. He's kind of our point person on climate change adaptation in terms of research. As a go-to person, the way that Ron Follett is in ARS for the mitigation. So this whole national climate assessment was mandated back in 1990 by Congress, and the whole idea was to provide a synthesis of the U.S. Global Change Research Program results and to look at the scientific uncertainties associated with the impacts of climate. And the concern is the impact of climate on just about all sectors of the United States. Natural environment, agriculture, land and water resources, biological diversity. And then the more human side of things, energy production and use, transportation, human health and welfare, human social systems. And there's an economic component to all of these things that we're trying to emphasize a little more this time around. And then there are regional reports, regional assessments, looking at these parts, Alaska, the coast, the Great Plains, islands, Midwest, Northeast, Northwest, Southeast, and Southwest. And a number of our authors contributing to the NCA on agriculture, like Jerry, for example, are contributing to some of the geographical, regional reports. So the NCA for Agriculture is going to focus on agriculture and ecosystem services, looking at more of a landscape perspective. You know, ag is not just yield of crops. We're trying to take more of a systems perspective, looking at the linkages between physical, economic, and social aspects of agriculture, as well as the international component. One of our co-authors, Laura Lingnick, who's here, is our sustainability and systems conscience, as I call her, and yes, tries to keep our perspective on that, looking at the complexities of agriculture. And the idea also is, besides the impacts, is to evaluate existing and future adaptation strategies. Kind of get an idea of what is going on now, what's possible now, and what's possible in the future in any kinds of trends. Part of the challenge with this is that there are things going on right now that we tend to hear as anecdotal information. Growers in a certain part of the country will change the varieties that they're using. They will prepare themselves for maybe an increased incidence of extreme events, for example, and so forth. So some of these things are not exactly in the scientific literature, so they're a little bit of a challenge to get a hold of. So that this is something where we could definitely use some input from the stakeholder and scientific community at large. The time frame is the next 25 to 100 years. And another thing they're emphasizing this time are risk assessments. So we will be getting CMIP-3 climate projections from the atmospheric science community. We're fortunate to have Peter Backlund from NCAR as a part of the lead author team. So he has some of his support people providing us directly with products from the CMIP 3 climate projections, which were used for the last IPCC. They're in the process of putting together CMIP 5, so we may have some of those runs as well, some of the data from that. And the nice thing about that is, in terms of having Peter on it, is that we also have one of the Federal Advisory Committee members who's in atmospheric science is working with us, Don Weebles from University of Illinois, who's very interested in agriculture. We also have, so we'll have these projections that we can start looking at in terms of this is what we think we can expect and assess what we think the impacts will be and how, what are some of the ideas for adaptation. It's all pretty much in process because, as we all know, adaptation to climate change is kind of a fairly new thing. I mean, the emphasis on climate change has been mitigation for a long time for the mainstream discussions, although a few of us in the agricultural communities have been saying, hey, you know, climate change is an issue we have to start looking at. We also have the benefit of the AgMIP project. Jerry Hatfield is also a member of that, one of the leaders of that. There were some sessions today on AgMIP, and so we have the access to the modelers and the whole suite of different models that we can plug these future climate projections into and look at the impacts on yields. And we can also feed the process of improving the models because of the insights and the whole system's perspective, because as we know, a lot of the yield models don't take into account things like pathogens, insects, and so forth, or even improvements in genetic varieties and things like that. And there's, you know, there's work going on in all these areas to provide either coefficients or submodels that will provide a more realistic expectation or projection of what's happening. We're also looking at threshold tables, and these are something that were in SAP 4.3, which is the 2009 National Climate Assessment, which are basically the bounds of temperature and moisture that the crops can require to survive in. And so we can look at these tables, look at what the climate projections have to say, and see which ones will create challenges for us. This is something that something that needs to be expanded, because some of these things are not as straightforward. Because for temperature, for example, you'd like to know the number of days it's below a threshold or above a threshold. The precipitation intensity issue is a little difficult to deal with. As we know, the changing precipitation patterns are now such that a lot of the rainfall events are fast-moving, high-intensity events that just kind of dump and move through, which has implications for not only the crop itself, but for the soil resources, as well as the ability to actually get in a field and actually cultivate. As I said, we're investigating new approaches. This is where we're looking to our colleagues for some new ideas. If you have some perspectives on what you think can be done to kind of look at the potential risks that we're facing in agriculture in the future, you know, we'd like to hear about them. The previous assessments were done in 2000 and 2009. As time has gone on, these documents have gotten bigger, of course, with the science proceeding. The agriculture in 2013, of which Jerry was the lead author, was a chapter in this report. It's cited quite frequently, and a very good synopsis of the science at that point in time, and we're using this as our baseline as we move forward in the current NCAA, which is due in 2013. And the goal of the entire NCAA across all sectors is to enhance the ability of the U.S. to anticipate, mitigate, and adapt to changes in the global environment. So it's covering the whole gamut of things. And as you'll see with the vision statement, there's more emphasis now on creating processes that can be carried forward into the future. This once every 5 years type of approach makes for a lot of scrambling and a lot of, gee, well, you know, if we had more time, we could have done this or that. So there's a lot of emphasis on making a standing process. And my hope is, for at least the agriculture, is to develop a community within the scientific agricultural community where we can continue looking at this and maybe pull together the information a little better and some of the procedures for risk assessment and be a little more ready next time it comes around. And I know in the discussions among the authors and our colleagues we've been talking to, people are starting to think about the whole systems approach, the issue of the sustainability of not just the crops themselves, but the natural resources base that's necessary to keep agriculture alive. The products for 2013, there's these written reports that go to Congress. The plan is to have web-accessible products, and this means detailed reports, fact sheets, anything else anybody can come up with to communicate the information. And a big part of it is the adaptation and assessment capacity. What's possible out there and where are we at risk for a lack of ability to anticipate and be ready to make a decision and move forward. Once again, the methodologies for the assessments, and this has to go across multiple scales. It has to be relevant to the producers themselves as well as strategic decision makers looking at policies and legislation and so forth, as well as interaction with our international colleagues. This ongoing national evaluation of changes in climate trends and impacts and risks is at the heart of it, because as I said earlier, impacts have been a major emphasis of the scientific community for a while. Temperature, precipitation, excuse me, as well as, excuse me, the enhanced carbon dioxide effects. Excuse me. A big part of this is documenting any kind of processes, any kind of methods involved. And everything has to be scientifically vetted, so peer-reviewed. So, and the bottom line is, this has to get out so people can use it. So hence a major emphasis on communication and information products that can be digested by everyone out there, from lay people to producers and policymakers and so forth. What we're doing as a group right now is producing a technical reference document. So we're doing a literature review and as much analysis and assessments as we can in terms of actual impacts, still under development, but that this document is due to the National Climate Assessment Office and the Federal Advisory Committee on March 1st of 2012. Tight deadline. This will be a scientific document, and it will contain only peer-reviewed information. Anything that is not peer-reviewed will that may have some value or is in the process of being peer-reviewed will be noted as such, but there's not going to have a whole lot that has not been vetted. There's sections on current trends and global change. That's where our colleagues in the climate world, Peter Backlund, and probably some input from Don Weebles as well, what's going on in terms of the changes in the atmosphere, but also there's some economic issues involved in the systems. How is agriculture changing? What's going on? And how is climate change interacting or impacting that? And trying to do some forecasts of major trends for the future. And this is where the risk assessment and analysis comes in. This is where the social aspects of it come in, the economic aspects, as well as the physical aspects, new technologies in agriculture, and so forth. And we're trying to take into account what kinds of things out there our colleagues in the scientific community are developing in terms of looking at forecasts. So we're trying to pull as much as we can together given the time allotted. The way the NCA has been operating, there was an announcement in the Federal Register putting out a call for inputs to the National Climate Assessment. So we will have access and interaction with other groups that have contributed information to the NCA via that Federal Register notice. We have a liaison named Chelsea Ford, who's on detail from the Forest Service, and she has access to all the additional inputs that have come in to the NCA office and has already started delivering some of that to us. So we're not doing this in isolation. There's a 61-member Federal Advisory Committee for the National Climate Assessment. And the DAC is, which is National Climate Assessment, something in Advisory Committee. Development or Direction? Yeah, an Advisory Committee. Interesting group to work with. Jerry Melillo of Woods Hole, who's an experienced climate change scientist, is the head of the whole thing. Dave Gustafson from Monsanto, he's our primary agriculture liaison. He brings a very unique perspective to this whole effort that's different from those of us who conduct research day to day. So he's very, very helpful. we have Mark Howden from CSIRO Australia, Don Weebles, as I said, from University of Illinois, Diana Liberman from University of Arizona. She is a social scientist, so we've had some good input from her. And then Ratan Lal from Ohio State University, who's a well-known climate change researcher, who's, as we all probably know, he's focused mainly on mitigation aspects of it, greenhouse gas emissions and carbon sequestration. So I think we have a pretty good advisory committee here. We're fortunate to have all of them providing input to us. So what's new for 2013 for agriculture? Well, we have our own standalone document, where before it was a chapter in a larger document dealing with biodiversity and land and some other resources. As I said, there's an increased emphasis on process development. We may not be able to carry through on some of these processes, but we will be able to recommend some ideas for either future research or ways to assess what's coming down the pike. There's a major emphasis on stakeholder input. The NCA office, that's a part of the U.S. Global Change Research Program, has had stakeholder town hall meetings around the country over the last year or so, where agriculture has been one of the topics, and they put out a series of reports. I was a part of one in Chicago and did get to interact with a few people from the world of agriculture. And I know Jerry travels around talking to a lot of people in agriculture, stakeholder groups, commodity groups, and so forth. And actually, that's part of our task this fall, giving them basically this presentation to stakeholder groups. I'm talking to the CTIC next week. Bill Hohenstein of the USDA Global Change Program Office spoke to a group a couple weeks ago, talking to the Progressive Farmer Group in December. Jerry and a few of the other authors will be speaking at the Ag Outlook Forum. So, and it's hopefully a dialogue. Okay, there's so many aspects of agriculture that we want to hear perspectives. And once again, the risk assessment aspect of it is basically the bottom line, and what Congress wants to know is where are we vulnerable, and what's the probability of an impact, and how severe will it be? Something else new for 2013, we're bringing in a whole section on soils. Okay, we'll have the literature review aspects of it, and actually we have one soil erosion modeler who's working directly with NCAR via Peter Backlund, one of his support scientists, and he's getting exactly what he needs where it's possible in terms of the climate projections to run some soil erosion scenarios under these different climate projections for the future. So we're pretty excited about that. And once again, the systems perspectives, one of the messages we want to convey is the complexity of agriculture. There's the physical environment, there's the economic environment, there's the social environment, the landscape, and then there's things like ecosystem services that landscapes are often overlooked for, at least from the general public and even Congress, in terms of their value as watersheds, airsheds, biodiversity, and now carbon sequestration and recreation and so forth. So we're hoping to add these new elements to it. And there are specific messages that I'm asking my author teams for, and that's something we'd like to hear from you all as well. Are there some messages out there that you don't think get enough airplay, so to speak, in the general discussion about climate change and agriculture that we need to convey in this report? So the climate changes we're talking about are direct or abiotic effects, temperature and precipitation trends, and the variability, the extremes. I mean, this is one of the first things the GCM modelers, the climate modelers, predicted like 25 years ago. I remember sitting in a room with one of them, and they said, we're going to expect wide swings of temperature and precipitation. I think unless you've been living in a cave or something the last 10 years, everybody can attest to this. Severe weather events, fires and floods. Okay, not just droughts, but floods, as we've seen. Changes in species are, as well as dry temperatures, like cheatgrass, for example, in the western United States, makes for fabulous fuel for fires. So that's part of the change. Change in growing season lengths, we've seen all over. And with these wide swings in temperature, you get things like frost at odd times. You get precipitation events at odd times, which have these biotic effects after a while. Snowmelt timing, availability, it's stressing our infrastructure for water availability for agriculture and industrial uses. The rising sea level issues along the coast, saltwater infusions and things like that. The enhanced atmospheric CO2 effects. And the bottom line here that I think is one of these things needs to be said a lot more about is the soil vulnerability. Then the indirect and the biotic effects with the changing habitats, we're going to see shifts in insect populations. Weeds are especially receptive to the additional carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. If you talk to any gardener in the United States, they'll say, yeah, I'm seeing a lot of weeds I've never seen before, and the ones I'm dealing with are exceptionally vigorous. I have to hit them with a lot of herbicide to get rid of them. And that also goes into human health and things like that. You've heard the studies about the poison ivy, for example. You know, it's like 10 times more virulent than it was in the 50s. The ureasol, the chemical that irritates human skin, is much more highly concentrated in the plant. There's actually more of it in the plant, and so it volatilizes into the atmosphere. And you no longer have to just touch the plant. Yet if you're just near it, that compound is in the air around it. Animal health, something we don't hear enough about in terms of changes of temperature and humidity, which has major effects on animal health. And then there are some implications for food and forage quality. We're seeing some changes in the human food supply in terms of concentration of nutrients and compounds that have impacts for human health. Some of them are positive. On the other hand, for things like some of the forage species that do respond very well to atmospheric CO2, where you get a biomass flush, you get increased biomass over a shorter period of time. The concern is that this growth of biomass is so fast that it is unable to uptake the nutrients it needs to provide something that's nutritious for the animals. So you'll have a lot of biomass out there that is nutritionally poor for range beef, for example. And so are the ranchers going to have to provide supplemental feed to deal with this? So things like this that are out there, these indirect effects, and it basically comes down to the abiotic effects, change in habitats and whatnot. Preaching to the choir here, obviously. We have a lead author team that's been coordinating this, and I'm very happy to say that we work well together and moving forward. There's a variety of perspectives and experience. Myself, Jerry, who worked on SAP 4.3, the 2009 project, Peter Backlund, who has been involved in the IPCC, Meg Walsh, who's with the USDA Climate Change Program Office. She was heavily involved in SAP 4.3 in terms of moving the thing forward. She's kind of my taskmaster. Laura Langneck, who's a visiting scientist with the Office of National Programs and ARS, our systems person. And then we're fortunate to have a very young, talented economist from the USDA Economic Research Service, Elizabeth Marshall. And some of the conversations among the lead team in terms of how to deal with some of the systems aspects and the economics in terms of looking at impacts and stuff have been pretty interesting, and there's some innovative ideas coming out of these discussions that are pretty exciting. And when we talk about the impacts analysis for the risk assessment, some of those conversations have been pretty exciting. So now the larger contributing team is a very distinguished group of scientists as well, several of them in here. But we seem to be adding them almost weekly. Requirement was, I went to a number of my USDA scientists and said, you've been working in this arena, we're doing this report, you know, can you contribute to it? Now, okay, if you say yes, you have to go out and find somebody who's non-USDA, some of your university, NGO, or industry colleagues, so you can get a balanced perspective. And you'll see that's pretty well reflected here. And we even have some several non-U.S. citizens, colleagues, Mike Rivington, who's here, and Dr. Jones here from Western Australia. So there was no limit on where you could get your co-authors, just as long as they had some expertise in it, and they were scientists and you know, had some credibility. So it's a pretty exciting crew. We have a mix of modelers and experimentalists, people who work on a micro scale, people who work on a macro scale, and so I think it's going to prove to be an interesting challenge to put all this together, but I think we'll have a pretty thorough report if it doesn't kill us. Some of the support, Chelsea Ford, as I said, Dr. Aman from NCAR, he's a support scientist for Peter Backlund, Paul Robinson from NCAR providing logistics, she's here in the back, she provided our refreshments and set up this session. We have another logistics support person from NCAR, and I have recruited one of my program analysts in the Office of National Programs to help out as well, so with logistics and things. So we're in pretty good hands by some people who are very, very capable and keep us moving forward and in the right ballpark. So the report itself, the straw man outline we have now that we're working from, is illustrated here on the next few slides. So as you can tell, we're trying to be as comprehensive as possible, and the challenge will be to get this information down to a couple of pages per topic, because what we are putting together is a technical reference document for the NCA Federal Advisory Group to do the final report that goes to Congress and the administration. Although they're not going to write it. It'll be some scientists. I know Jerry's been drafted to help with that, as well as Gene Tackley here from Iowa State. And the rest of us are kind of backup for it. But they will have the final say, at least the Federal Advisory Committee will have the final say on what goes out in the report. Now, we expect what we're producing to be well over 100 pages, plus some appendices and references, and they have to produce something that's 15 or 20 pages on agriculture, optimistically. So there's, as you see, there's the environmental aspects, the socioeconomic aspects, the international feedback and trade issues, And then the adaptive capacity and what's being done now, as much as we can inventory that. Past and future climate, Peter Backlund, atmospheric scientist. And then an overview of climate change influences on U.S. agriculture. And this is where we get into the biotic and the abiotic, the extreme events, geographical changes in distribution that we're seeing already and potentially occurring in the near future, the issue of the soil resources, once again, that's new, and the ecosystem services. We want to play that up a little bit as well. And then the impact synergies, how these things are linked. You know, the complexity of agriculture. You can't push on one aspect of agriculture to have it not affect something else. Other topics, we get down into some specifics. There's a general overview, including biomass crops and global demands. The increasing population, and you know, you've heard it at this conference about the demands that would be put on agriculture to feed the increasing population, especially by the mid-century. As much information as we can gather on some of the major commodity crops, as well as specialty crops, and we've broken specialty crops down into annuals and perennials. And then we can draw upon the AgMIP simulations to look at some of the specifics where we can. Those are very limited because the AgMIP project is still spinning up, but I know Jerry told me there were 45 different maize models, 48 maze models being brought to bear on this. So it'll be in an ensemble type approach that they do with GCMs, or general circulation models. For the livestock, confined systems and open systems, as many species as we can, beef cattle, dairy cattle, swine, poultry, sheep, goats, rangeland, pastures, and forage. We have Jack Morgan, who was part of the IPCC, involved in the team, and then the international aspects. And this is an area that Terry Mader from University of Nebraska is basically taking the lead, because he's quite a leader on this topic. So we've handed it to him, and he's pulled his colleagues together. Adaptation to climate change. What are some new technologies out there? What are some new practices that are being done right now or that exist in the scientific literature? Here's how you deal with this or that based on what's been researched. And then the information and societal systems, extension, early adopters, et cetera. How does the information get out there? Who's going to use it? Based on our experiences with agriculture and technology, what do we think things look like in terms of dealing with it? We know from recent experience that although there are factions within the United States who still disavow that climate change is happening, that's not what we're hearing from the producers. That's not what we're hearing from the large agricultural companies. They're coming to us and saying, we are seeing changes. What do we do? How do we prepare ourselves? So they're very interested in this, and this is why there's the outreach to the stakeholders. Now, the economic implications are something that's a lot of work is currently being done right now, so it's going to be difficult to capture this in this report. Fortunately, with Liz Marshall on board, we can draw upon some of the work that she has done already or that the Economic Research Service and their colleagues are doing on terms of impacts, risks, and the cost of response measures. One of the things I tell people when I'm speaking about climate change is that the biotic factors may pose a greater challenge to agriculture, because these are things that not only reduce your yields, but cost money to deal with. A lot of inputs go into controlling pests, you know, pathogens, and so forth. So we've heard this from our overseas colleagues as well. So more economic implications, the international aspects, and the ability of the world to feed itself. How is that going to play in with the United States, the food security, and then the whole value chain, the impacts on that. Finally, the kind of the fun part for the scientists, what are the research needs? Where are the gaps? Where are the synergies that need to take place? And then probably a huge list of references and probably some appendices explaining some things as much as possible. One of the things I'm very big on in an endeavor such as this is developing our own language, okay? New terms for new concepts. new terms, new definitions, new terminologies that define the concepts we're dealing with. So there will be a section on that, and I urge all of you as colleagues to start thinking about how do we convey these things, how do we talk about these things, come up with new descriptions. These threshold tables, for example, that's something we talk about a lot. I'm sure there are some other ones out there that will come up before too long. We've actually had some discussions among the lead author team about this. But this will be a formal request to the full author team in terms of, are there some ways that we can come up with new terms to communicate what we're talking about and be able to reference it in the future? So who's the audience ultimately? We are writing this document from the perspective of what we think USDA strategic decision makers and major stakeholders would want to hear. From our perspective as being USDA employees and from people like Dave Gustafson, what do they want to hear? What do they want to know? And so that's our perspective. And so that includes people on the ground making day-to-day decisions, policymakers, research scientists, users of products and services provided by agricultural systems and resources, so the whole industry where necessary, and the ecosystem services aspects of it. Local, state, regional, national, and international organizations. We have some NGOs involved with us as well. So we're trying to provide what we think they would like to know based on what they're asking us. So how can you contribute? Well, you're here tonight. And so we'd like to have a little discussion following this. And there's a website where you can provide your own input. If you're part of a group that's undertaking some studies that you think that would impact the final NCA assessment on climate change in agriculture, there's your opportunity. So with that, I will close and open it up for questions and discussion. That is a topic we have discussed. There is a separate group in the NCA working on water. However, with water being the major issue for the 21st century, especially for agriculture, we expect it to be a continuous theme through just about all of the sections. So that may be one of the major messages we'd like to get out in the final, assessment. But your point is well taken. We toyed with the idea of putting water as a separate section, but we felt it was so integral to anything with agriculture that we wanted to keep it within the separate sections. And I'll let my co-authors provide any additional information that they'd like to, or perspectives.
Three things on that. There's the direct impact of changing water, both from a precipitation event as well as irrigation as part of that system. So that's actually a direct impact on all the different crops, whether they be green crops, as Charlie mentioned, on range and forage lands, annuals and perennials, all of those different pieces. But it's also the reason we put in the soils piece of it to say what is going to happen in terms of the soil resource, in terms of the ability to absorb water if we change the precipitation regime to be a much more intense water necessary. We've also looked at it from the systems perspective, and that is where does it all fit together in terms of crop and mix, in terms of water use efficiency, but also where we're irrigating, are we getting the most efficiency out of that irrigation? So you got all of that piece of the puzzle, and so when it gets to that systems perspective, is where we get that human dimensionality, the economic piece of it, the water supply piece, and then looking and saying, does climate change increase the vulnerability of all those different sectors, maybe at different rates, maybe at different scales? And so it's really a very interesting report when you think about it, as a potential being interesting report, to see what they've done. Charlie said initially, what we're really trying to do is build this document to show the value of agriculture, to show the importance of climate change in agriculture, to show why agriculture needs to be engaged, as well as how it's impacted by these very subtle things. So it hasn't been forgotten, but we also have got this balancing piece because of this other sectoral report just on the water itself. So there's kind of a nexus in that as we go along too.
Yeah, we're in contact with several other groups about these types of issues. Like there's a biogeochemical cycling report. It's basically, you know, nitrogen and carbon. And we have some cross-fertilization in terms of authors and information flow. So water is the same.
I think it's fine. I kind of see like the same IPCC report, for example, in 2001, means that you got parts of the land use changes, for example, not explicitly development, which they came up with something in the 2007. But in the 2007, the water cycle, global water cycle was not completely integrated there, and the energy aspect was missing as well. This time, it seems like the both aspects are kind of integrated a little bit. So it's a process, but probably what you keep in mind is that this might be evolving and integrating at the end of the day to the office or the company.
Yeah.
I would just add that we've had a lot of discussions with developers, but I think maybe it's a good point to take away from this meeting tonight that water may deserve its own place in that as well, just
yeah.
Because it is so important.
That
is. That's just a placeholder, even though we know it's going to be integrated along these ways. It might be worth mentioning that.
Yeah. Yeah, we figure, you know, we're going to write an executive summary in the front. We figure that's going to be a big part of the source of information for the final report, and that may be one place where that message needs to come out up front.
Responses of policy.
Good point. Good point.
So it's like 2/3, 1/3?
I don't know. What would you suggest, Mike?
50-50.
And actually, this has been another discussion that the author team has had, because this is a national climate assessment in the U.S., but the wrinkle for ag is really how does it interconnect in the world market. That's why we expanded so much in terms of utilizing Liz and the Economic Research Service to say just how do some of these policies link, and if we change this, this is what happens in the U.S., what might that do to potential exports, all of those and the implications on the world process, and then we go ad infinitum, probably on policy scenarios of what might happen as well. But we're somewhat constrained. The NACADAC, that's the name of that overall committee, the NACADAC is really pretty focused in terms of how far they're going to let us go in exploring all sorts of potential policies on this thing. So we're somewhat constrained there.
One of my secret objectives for this whole effort, as I said, is to develop a community that will continue to stay in touch after this. Because we figure, like any good scientific endeavor, we'll generate more ideas that we can handle with, more questions that we can handle with, but we hopefully will come up with some ways to handle them and continue down the road. Because I know in my day job as a program person, we're talking, I have scientists talking with the people at APHIS, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, and they want to know what's going on overseas in terms of climate change so they can provide some risk management for the occurrence of pathogens and insects that would be imported with agricultural goods to the United States so they can anticipate and then move resources around in terms of increasing the number of inspectors and things like that at specific ports. So it's kind of works in both ways. Yeah, and there's all kinds of aspects of it. Yes. That's actually going to be part of new technologies, but also ingrained in the discussions of the impacts on specific crops. Yeah, and another objective that several of us have concerning new technologies is the basically what I see, several of us see, is a revolution in fertilizer technologies going on right now. You know, some of these new formulations have implications for vigor as well as yield in terms of the susceptibility to pathogens and you know, insects and things that may contribute to our ability to adapt to the changes that are down the road. So what goes into new technologies and things will be a combination of genetics and genomics technologies that are being developed, as well as production strategies. You know, and there's even an era beyond that that we're not even going to touch, and that's food safety. So we're drawing the line basically at the edge of the watershed, so to speak.
Stresses are a problem.
Yeah, that's one of the things we talked about, and actually we have a workshop. Well, you're going to be at the workshop on Thursday, and we're hoping that some of these groups, like the pathogens and the insects people, will start talking to each other about these issues, because there's the whole issue of the effects of climate on plant signals to insects, for example. And so we've had these types of discussions, you know, how do we deal with that, the whole interaction. And I know that the scientists say they have some ideas on how to deal with it, but, you know, I'm not privy to it yet. But
the place is actually a little bit more developed than in the animal sector, because you look at the work that's been done on a lot of the insects or even some of the diseases that infect animals, and there's been a much better relationship developed between the climate impacts on that and the stresses on the animal and then the propensity towards pest damage or pest influence on susceptible livestock. So that's actually a pretty good case study.
Yeah, that's one of the things we're urged to include in the reporter case studies that may go in the appendices type of thing.
Sorry.
No, this is good. That's good.
You mentioned websites and products.
That's my understanding from what the NCA office is telling us. It'll be something we can provide updates to, or you can provide links to other sites that have good scientifically vetted information out there. You know, my research background was in remote sensing, so I'm kind of big on maps and things like that, and I think that conveys things pretty well. So as we produce these types of products, if we can get them up and, you know, as they occur, as analysis continues, you know, it goes to the website. I think that they're trying to make a kind of a portal. So, Laura.
I was at that meeting where we discussed these future projects, and my understanding was that they're looking at, rather than one report every 4 years or 5 years, to do regular reporting on different aspects. So instead of one national climate assessment, there'll be more in-depth reports on specific aspects as a way to keep this a
rolling
process.
Yeah, and I think that's the key word, is that this really rocket speed timeline to deliver something to the technical committee by the 1st of March. Things that we hear, and Lauren just mentioned it, is really in the 2013 report, is really an establishment of what we know today and the process of moving forward. And it's that process of moving forward that's going to be the continual update on the website, kind of thing. So it's not a 2013 report and a 2017 report, it's more of a continuum of how we're advancing through this space and everything. Which is kind of a unique approach for the climate change
committee. They've already started that with these workshops that they've published this year. So they can find on their site, asking specific methodology questions, for example, or updating the status of knowledge in some particular area and then putting it out.
So
it's an attractive approach, I think, to doing.
Yeah.
It seems like that would make the next report much more, the collection of information is an ongoing thing, and you don't have to stop and collect it all, but
right.
The focus on the next one could really be on synthesis and analysis, interpretation,
yeah. Exactly.
Put it all together, but you'd have it all, it would all be there embedded and accessible to the whole community. So,
yeah, I know.
If the website is really well maintained and vetted, you know, it's an ongoing process. We'll take that back to the magazine.
we'll take that back to NACADAC. They're the only ones working full time on this because the rest of us have. Yeah, I mean, the rest of us have day jobs, you know, while we're trying to do this. So, but with that in mind, I mean, my day job is a program leader for the ARS climate change program, and I'm trying to rally the troops across other programmatic lines like the plant side and the animal side to get some heads together thinking about how do we tackle this adaptation thing. And I'm going to incorporate the NCA into the next five-year cycle of my research program because we're big on synthesis and integration. We put out white papers that get published. They get peer-reviewed and go into journals. We put out books and things like this, you know, review papers and so forth. And I think if we can instill this in our scientists that they're contributing to a bigger answer or information conveyance, I think it'll bring some focus to what we're doing and hopefully maintain the continuity of the process. Yeah, and one thought would be to go to some of the commodity groups, the agricultural organizations, and ask them to poll their members. Yeah. We'll kind of use them as... Yeah.
I took a photograph on Sunday of patterned tile on slope surfaces in Iowa. They're tiling slope surfaces, but they can't get even, you know, the slope isn't enough to get rid of the water. You've got to put tile on 50-foot spaces across the slope.
That's good to know.
But coming back to the surveys, those surveys are being done. USDA has issued some fairly large grants about a year ago on one on corn, the corn cap, Lewis, Red Morton, and Linda Procopy at Purdue. Maybe they're probably presenting they...
And one in Washington.
And, yes, and there's and one at Cornell.
And Cornell State
University. Yeah. And part of that is, and these are sociologists, so they, and they're building on these, they have their annual survey of producers, so it isn't as if you're sending out one to people who don't know, you know, the background of this, or people who get surveyed in the community, so they have very good responses, and so, and they're now shaping the questions for the current one that's going to go out, and so there will be some of these where they get their information and what kind of information is useful to them and what kind of responses or actions they're taking. So I think that would be a, but I don't know if that's going to be available or not.
Lois is on our
reallocation. Yeah, I saw she was on it. So, but I think some of it is already out, hasn't been analyzed.
I wonder if this wouldn't be an opportunity to work with NASS on a survey question or survey questions about climate impacts on agriculture.
Yeah, I had a discussion with somebody from ERS that does the works with NASS on the census of agriculture.
Yeah, the census.
Yeah, they were asking for questions concerning greenhouse gas issues. And so I suggested that they ask them some simple questions that could be used to as input to, say, some of the models like Comet VR, for example. And so there potentially could be similar types of questions into the next one.
That'd be a question to ask with this.
Yes. Yeah. Anything else?
Well, as long as somebody else is jumping in here, I do think this would be a good opportunity, even though you're Nike Deck now, to try to convey the issue of the interconnectedness of the rest of the world. So the issue of climate change in those locations is going to have an impact on the rest of the world. The other is going to have an impact on those other locations. And the policies that you put in place at the borders of these countries are going to make a big difference in how we might be impacted. So it's not just about U.S. policies per se, it's about international policies.
Yeah, actually, we had a lot of that discussion with the lead author team. And what we've been trying to get across to them is that you cannot look at U.S. agriculture in isolation. That it is a part of the global economy, it's part of the global food chain, all of these pieces. So you've got all this interconnectedness that goes on, and it's a matter of how do we explain that, all those linkages, in a way that
yeah, when it comes down to writing this, it's going to be a real challenge. Fortunately, we have Liz and we have Laura, as well as somebody like Jerry, who's talked to so many different grower groups and industry groups. The hope will be we'll be able to put something together that gets below the general acknowledgement of the issues and comes up with something that's meaningful and useful. Even a case study. A case study that illustrates it would be useful.
I think what I'm hearing is just it's important that we emphasize it somehow.
Right.
We don't have to solve it. Or just
yeah.
I mean, for example, you know, if you look at the case studies, look at the effect of the Russian heat wave and fires and then the ban on exports and what that did in prices.
Yeah.
You can look at that. So it's the Russian, it's the Pakistan flood and the Australian flood.
Excellent, excellent.
And the other thing you could do is say, you know, Jerry, and I don't know if you've actually seen, depending upon the GCF, you can get some really horrendous results on the low aspects and plays out around the world in terms of prices. So, there's two kinds of ways to break.
One thing I would suggest is looking at visiting the RMA about changes in crop insurance policies and look at what has happened with the Prairie Pablo region and in preventive planting decisions they made in terms of cutting off producers. We've had four consecutive years of preventive planting. It's been very interesting to see in the spring how many farmers in North Dakota and South Dakota will not be able to buy preventive planting insurance this year because they've had four consecutive years of preventive planting. And their guys going back 15, 20 years who've had that. And in my view, that is the crop insurance industry making an adaptation to climate change. The insurance industry made this adaptation. We're kind of tired of paying for not planting, so we're going to cut these guys off in this area where we have a lot of problems. So it's going to be interesting to see next spring just what those numbers look like, you know, particularly given North Dakota somewhere what, between 5-6 million acres in preventive planting this year.
Are you familiar with that, Jerry? Are you saying
preventive planting? They were paid insurance indemnity because they were not able to get crop planted. And I was standing on one guy's farm who had 30, it was white capping, 35 feet of water in an area that he had planted 3 years earlier, you know. There's so much water up in North Dakota, it's insane.
That's one of the issues that's been brought up. We have a whole generation of farmers that's used to being farmers in a period of relative climatic stability. And the next generation, or even some of the current generation, they're going to have to change the way they approach things. And the next generation, hopefully we can equip them with the ability to adapt.
Well, they're tiling.
Yeah.
Let's get that tile in 35 feet of water.
Yeah.
But they are tiling the river.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Well, with that, I want to thank everybody. It's been a good discussion. And there's still some goodies back there, if you don't mind spoiling your dinner. But anyway, we're available for input at any time. This is exactly the kind of discussion we were looking for. So, thank you.